Senate Labor and Commerce Committee please come to order? Let the record show that Senator Sharp, Kelly, and Salo are present. It is February 8th, Thursday, 1:30 p.m. in Betty's room. And the first bill we'll hear is SB 208, Employment of Certain State Employees and Officers Seeking Special Elections to State or National Office. What is the proposed committee substitute?
Mr. Chairman, the proposed committee substitute specifies that that the railroad is covered, as the railroad is a separate legal entity with separate legal existence from the state. There's also some ambiguity with regard to the Alaska Valley Finance Corporation, and so we've listed them. What we did is we had legal run a search on all state entities to find out which ones had separate legal existence and were not covered in the title on personnel, and we found that there were seven. We then checked those statutes and found that they defined their employees as state employees. So we were covered on all bases except for the HFC and the Alaska Railroad, so they were specifically added.
Okay. Any questions? Senator Sharp, do we move to adopt the CS? Oh, I'm sorry. Did you want to make a statement, Dave?
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Yeah, I support the CS. I'm glad the committee took the time to look into that, that those two corporations are separate. The only other question I wanted to raise to the committee and I was whether the committee felt that people who are in the lower range of classified employees, say under range 15, which I talked to some people in administration today is the decision-making range, where 15 and below, they usually don't have autonomous decision-making responsibilities, if we might want to exempt them. But that's up to the committee, of course. It's just an idea I wanted to throw out. I do have an amendment drafted to do that if the committee thought that was wise. I guess that kind of runs along with what I said the last meeting. I just don't think this was really targeted at keeping somebody who's in, you know, a lower state position. It's just just comes to work and works their weekly hours and might want to run for some office somewhere.
I sort of agree with that when you're dealing with having to file conflict statements and stuff like that. But in this case, you know, my concern is somebody working for the public and yet campaigning for elective office while they're working for the public. Yep. Paid to work a 40-hour week, because we all know how this works. You get phone calls in the daytime. You've got to go to lunches. You've got to do this and you do that. And my concern for public employees is more how much time is taken out of the 40-hour week than, you know, what range salary they are. So I wouldn't object to that down the road too strongly, but, you know, my concern is the basic, are they putting in their 40 hours a week? And I think, you know, that's a little, I don't know, maybe that's a little targeted. You might want to try it on the floor. I wouldn't object if you do that.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Was there a motion to adopt?
Mr. Chairman, I would move that we move out CS for Senate Bill 280, Labor and Commerce, number J, Kramer 2794, with individual recommendations.
Objections? Without objections, committee substitute Senate Bill number 208, Labor and Commerce is adopted and sent out of committee. Senate Bill 212, Buy Alaska legislation. I know, Josh, you've been working on this for how long, 4 years?
Two and a half.
Yeah. And I know it's close to your heart. What is the proposed CS?
For the record, Mr. Chairman, my name is Josh Fink, aide to the Senate Labor and Commerce Committee. The changes are on page 2 in the findings, purpose, and intent on line 10. We added, it did just read, identify available Alaskan goods and services to foster bidding by local businesses and labor forces. And at Senator Lincoln's request, we added end resident to try to give some sense that it's the intent that actual local residents.
Where is that added at?
That's page 2, line number 10 at the end of the line. End resident was added. And then on page 6, line 16 and 17, this is new language. This section has to do with the report the Commissioner of the Department of Transportation has to submit on the pilot bonus program. It's a report submitted 15 months and 27 months after the program is initiated. And at Senator Lincoln's request, We added in that that report cover the geographical region where the construction is to be performed and also list whether the contractor would be classified as a minority contractor. And those are the two changes, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Any questions?
Mr. Chairman?
Senator Lincoln.
Sorry.
Go ahead. Senator Lincoln.
On page 5 under the innovative constructive, section 8, line 27. As last time, it was noted that the difference between the preference, that the preference ended at, excuse me, the bonus ends at the time of the, no, I'm sorry, I got that wrong again. Let me try it again. The bonus is incentives throughout the life of the contract, and the preference that was on there previously was through, ends at the time of the bid. Is that correct? How I remembered it.
Through the chair, the preference comes into play at the opening of the bid where you reduce the actual bid amount. If there's a low out-of-state bidder, and you've got an Alaskan bidder, the next low bidder, you would reduce that Alaskan bidder's bid by a certain percentage is the idea of the preference. So it's an upfront preference, and then the state is responsible for ensuring that what was claimed and awarding the preference is followed through the life of the contract. So there's more administrative time involved.
For the bonus.
For the preference. The bonus, through the chair, Senator Lincoln, the bonus, you just go for low bid at opening, the bonus concept, and what it is at the end of the contract, the onus is on the contractor then to provide the documentation that they, in fact, hired locally, used local products, were an Alaskan business, and after they show that to the department, they would get a bonus on the contract award amount. So the incentive is throughout the entire period of the contract, and it's more administratively efficient as the state does not have to ensure compliance with the preferences that were claimed at the front end.
Okay, but the way I understood it, Mr. Chairman, that the way it was explained is the bonuses, that these incentives, that there was a periods of time that these incentives could kick in, that it wouldn't be necessarily right at the front or right at the end, but the bonuses would kick in if after a year you did such and such or 2 years you did such and such.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Lincoln, I believe, and maybe I'm wrong on this, but when Mr. Rasmussen from the Department of Transportation spoke about it, I think what he said was, you might have a situation where at the near project completion, you have contractors realizing, gosh, I don't know if I've done everything to meet my bonuses. So there might be a stronger incentive at the end of a contract to hire more local people and to make sure you're using some Alaskan products to ensure that you're going to qualify for that bonus. And you're going to get more concerned about that as you're near the end of the project and you start looking at, did I do everything I need to do to make the bonus? So it still is at the end of the project.
Further questions? Senator Sharp?
Mr. Chairman, I would move Committee Substitute Labor and Commerce Senate Bill 212.
Any objections? No objections. Committee Substitute Senate Bill Number 212, Labor and Commerce, is adopted.
With the added notations?
Yes. They're in the committee substitute. Senator Sharp, move out of committee.
I'd move Committee Substitute Senate Bill 212, Labor and Commerce, out of committee with individual recommendations and accompanying fiscal notes.
Without objection, Senate Bill 212, Committee Substitute, Senate Bill 212, Labor and Commerce, moves out of the Senate Labor and Commerce Committee. That will bring us to House Bill 180, Residential Housing Inspection Requirements for AHFC. Dave?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
You want to explain the committee substitute to us?
My name is David Harding, staff representative McLean. I don't actually have my hands on a copy of the committee substitute, but
neither do we, don't worry.
Oh, okay, great. I don't feel that bad.
Oh, I see. Okay, we're getting one.
Thank you. The only change here is on page 2, lines 17 and 18, the definition of rural area. The committee had concerns that the definition was a little too broad before, and so we added the population cap in there. That is the only change.
And who does that cover there?
Hmm. Well, that would cover communities like Ketchikan. Sitka Maybe it would cover Sitka, too. I'm looking at the list of... This doesn't approve, doesn't apply for communities that have municipal codes that they enforce. And so any community over 5,500, before too long, it would probably include Bethel. The latest revenue sharing population number on Bethel is just over 5,000.
But it does include Juneau now, and there's a couple of fall through the cracks, but we can't have it all. I don't think it includes Cordova, correct?
Right. Cordova's only about 2,000.
Senator Lincoln?
But the way this reads is that rural would not include Minto, that's connected by road to Fairbanks,
right.
Manly, all of the Otna communities, Chistochina,
right.
All of those.
This bill is not intended to catch people along the road system. When this relates to inspections that are done by these, what they're called, ICBO inspectors, International Conference of Building Organizations, or something like that. And the ICBO legislation that was passed maybe 3 or 4 years ago was designed for construction along the rail belt, or along the road system. And it was when DCRA's rural housing program was merged into HFC that we ended up with a situation where rural housing loans that had not been subject to the ICBO inspections were now suddenly subject to them for no reason other than the merger of this program, and so we're trying to address that problem. The ICBO legislation was intended to affect communities like Minto and the Otna villages and such, so we're not really dealing with that. We're only trying to deal with the problem that was created in the merger. The Bush communities that are off the road system were suddenly brought into this, and the feeling is that, the thought here is that these are the communities that would have the most significant economic impact from this. I think NBA had an example of a house out in St. Paul they were trying to get qualified, and the inspections were going to cost, up to $7,000 or something by the time somebody flies out there four times at a minimum. So what we're trying to do is cut the cost in places where you got to fly in inspectors, where they don't have any inspectors nearby, where somebody can't just drive down the highway.
But Mr. Chairman, I have a problem with that. When to get to Manly takes, if you can get to Manly, takes, and there's a road connecting there, but that takes, it takes me about 5 hours to drive there on a little cow path, but it's a road and it's connected to Fairbanks. Now, or even Manly, that is impassable in the wintertime, but this is not covered by that.
Yeah, that was not the intent here. I'm sorry.
I would just add that roads such as Eagles is accessible
Eagles?
In the summertime, but not the wintertime.
Right.
It's still connected by roads. So I don't know if this definition is going to cause us more problems than it's worth it.
Mm-hmm.
That's not
well,
the
this definition does nothing for Eagle or Manly. It just 5,500. That's all we did is added 5,500, right? But all that does is make sure we pick up Juneau and Ketchikan and the areas down here that are not connected to the roads.
But it reads, with a population of 5,500 or less, that is not connected by road or railroad. So that Eagle would fall into that, Manly, Minto.
But this, Mr. Chairman, this legislation does not affect any existing arrangement as far as Minto or Manly or any of them.
But you're trying to correct it so that it would, that the inspectors are not having to be required to.
Yeah, the ICBO law was intended to cover the road system, and so we're not taking that one on. That is not the intent of this legislation, and perhaps at some point it should be addressed. All we were trying to do was remedy a problem that resulted from the merger of the rural programs, which did not have any inspection requirements. Once they were merged into HFC, Representative McLean felt that some kind of housing inspection regime would be a good idea out there, but that it ought to be more flexible. So sort of midway between what it was before and the way it was after this forced merger.
Well, have we ever received any complaints from Minto or Manly or Eagle about this program the way and their inspection requirements that you know of?
Not in the 2 years we've been working on this legislation.
Which is not a surprise. Mr. Chairman, where does this go after balance? I don't have the original, so I don't see where the next committee of referral is.
I believe it goes to rules.
Chairman, the next committee of referral is rules.
Well, all right, let's do this. Let's have this another meeting, and Senator Lincoln, why don't you come up with language that will address the problem? And if you can, you know, we'll certainly look at it. But it's going to be awfully difficult to get in and, you know, connected by road or rail, that's a term that we use a lot around here.
Right.
It's going to be real difficult to try to get in and narrow it down any further than that. But if you want to take a shot at it, we'll hold it till Thursday.
Okay. Yeah, I would just say that I'm really not interested in fixing any more of the problem that we personally that we created when we merged AFC and Alaska State Housing, since maybe there was no problem to begin with other than what we're trying to fix here. With that consideration.
Yeah. Can I just add one thing, Mr. Chairman? This definition of rural mirrors a part of the definition of small community later on in the chapter that only applies to certain sections. The other part of that definition is that a small community is defined as a community under 1,400 on the road system. And it seems to me that a numbers fix is really the only option you have here. And if you try to do a numbers fix, you're going to have communities right outside of Anchorage who are suddenly benefiting. There isn't a numbers fix that can get to the communities that you're talking about without bringing in a lot of
others. Well, let's do this. We've got plenty of time. The bill goes to rules next. Why don't you get together with Senator Lincoln and see if you guys can come up with language that can address a problem, whether it's received or not, and we'll bring the bill back up on Thursday.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay, who's going to start off with, Josh?
Chairman.
Okay, we have here Senate Bill 213, extend the Alaska Public Utilities Commission and regulatory cost charge. We'll start off with the chairman of the APUC, Don Shore. It's the intention of the committee to listen to testimony. To have staff list any proposed amendments made by any bodies today, and to perhaps have a working session, decide if we want to take up any of those amendments, work on a proposed committee substitute, and deal with it at a later date. Mr. Shore?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. A statement here I'd like to read into the record, and then I'll answer any questions that I'm able to when I'm finished with this. I welcome the opportunity to speak to you as you mark up sunset legislation for our agency. The Commission supports Senate Bill 213 and has recommended several amendments to it. One, the General Commission overview. The APUC is responsible for regulating Alaska's public utilities and pipeline carriers. Our mission statement says, the Alaska Public Utilities Commission protects and promotes the public interest by certificating and economically regulating only qualified public utilities and pipeline carriers. It oversees the availability, affordability, and quality of the utility services which are essential to Alaska's economic development. It does this by making timely decisions that balance the competing interests of various parties. The APUC issues certificates of public convenience and necessity to utility service providers and pipeline carriers who are fit, willing, and able to provide service. We approve the rates, terms, and conditions of service to the public. The Commission also does the rate setting for the Power Cost Equalization Program, which helps out to cover a portion of the bill for high-cost electrical service to almost 69,000 customers. The Commission consists of 5 members, each appointed by the Governor for a 6-year term. We have a budget of $3.6 million and a staff of 36. I am proud of the work of the Alaska Public Utilities Commission. Our legislative recommendations are as follows. Regulatory cost charge. The regulatory cost charge should be made permanent rather than simply extending the repeal date by 4 years. I believe that this funding source is with us to stay. If problems occur in the future, the Commission sunset review is adequate to address them. If the Commission were zeroed out of the budget, the authority and agency responsible to impose an RCC would both disappear. Utilities have expressed concern about the possibility of over-collection of RCC beyond the amount of the Commission's budget. Currently, the statute directs the Commission to change the rate as required to avoid over-collection. The problem is one of timing. By the time the fiscal year's results are known, it is too late to adjust the rate. If the fourth quarter payment is split and only that amount required to balance the budget is applied to the fiscal year, the balance would apply to the subsequent fiscal year. The Commission would be required to reduce the RCC rate to take this balance into account. Commission has proposed language to ensure that overcollection of RCC and lapsing into the general fund does not happen. Section 32 of the operating budget will ensure that no RCC funds collected this fiscal year lapse into the general fund. I recommend similar permanent language in AS 4205253 and 4206285. Regarding the power cost equalization, traditionally the Commission has been responsible for setting the electric rates for PCE. SB 106, the intertie bill, transferred the power cost equalization responsibilities formerly handled by the Alaska Energy Authority to the Department of Community and Regional Affairs. However, through a drafting error, some references to the Commission were inadvertently changed to the department. The bill has passed transfer to PCE calculation to the ECRA, but this was not the legislative intent. A revisor's bill has been prepared to correct this error. Meanwhile, the Commission will continue to carry out its assigned responsibilities under this program. Cable TV. The Commission has received authority from the Federal Communications Commission to regulate the basic tier of cable utilities currently regulated by the Commission under state law. This would apply only to BC Cable in Juneau at this time. The City and Borough of Juneau has expressed interest in regulating cable companies, but state law does not allow this at this time. A change in statutes would be needed to allow local governments to regulate cable TV. Regarding the pipeline administration, this is described in the annual report. In the interest of time, I will not restate it here. Commission procurement of expert witnesses. The Commission recommends adding an exemption to the Procurement Act 3638.50 to allow it to hire its expert witnesses for cases in a timely manner. The Commission has been unable to procure the professional service of expert witnesses in a timely fashion. The deadlines established in proceedings do not permit the procurement process to operate to produce a successful bidder in time for the contractor to properly prepare the case. Other parties to the proceedings utilizing private sector procurement procedures are able to hire their expert witnesses on a timely basis. The Commission is not. This either delays the processing of cases or forces Commission witnesses to rush the preparation of a case, thus affecting the accuracy and credibility of the work, as well as costing the state more for overtime. Next, I'd like to respond to each of the legislative changes suggested by ERICA. Liberally construed. The phrase liberally construed appears only once in AS 4205. It is found in Section 141, Our Powers and Duties section. It states, general powers and duties of the Commission. A, the Alaska Public Utilities Commission may, 1, regulate every public utility engaged or proposing to engage in such a business inside this state, except to the extent exempted by AS 4205-711, and the powers of the Commission shall be liberally construed to accomplish this its stated purpose. In HEA versus the City of Kenai, in the Supreme Court said, in sum, we've construed AS 4205-141A to mean that the actual areas in which the APUC may exercise its adjudicatory authority is quite narrow. Within those narrow areas, however, the APUC's powers to adjudicate are plenary, as broad as the specific provisions of the Act permit. This provision presents two guiding principles for determining the extent of APUC's jurisdiction under specific provisions of the Act. On the one hand, it includes a principle of limitation restricting the APUC's power to the specific jurisdictional areas of its stated purposes. On the other hand, it includes a principle of expansion mandating that the APUC's power to act within its specific areas of jurisdiction is to be liberally construed. The Alaska Supreme Court has dealt with this provision 8 times. In 4 of these cases, the court found the Commission lacked authority over yellow page ads, borough regulation of rights of way, attorney cost allocation, and to refuse a rate increase required by bond covenant. In another, Colville Environmental Services versus the North Slope Borough, the court concluded that the Commission's action fell squarely within the adjudicatory authority granted by Commission by AS 4205-271. In these cases, half the time utilities have used liberally construed as part of their own legal arguments, and the courts have ruled in their favor about half the time. The way I read it, this language does not confer upon the APUC any jurisdiction outside of its powers listed in the statute. If the APUC were a country, it would do nothing to expand our borders. Instead, it operates only within the statutory powers granted. I do not support deletion of this provision. The Commission has only discussed the issue of liberally construed 9 times in all orders that we issued during the first 25 years on the job. In at least 3 of these cases, the Commission acted to follow the intention of the utility or applicant for a certificate to be accomplished by waiving technical irregularities. In another, the Commission found that it did not have statutory authority to recognize a doctrine of retained rights requested by a telephone utility requested under the statute, despite liberally construed. Second issue is negotiated rulemaking. I think this is an interesting idea from the federal government that bears close examination. However, under the Constitution, it cannot mean delegation of the rulemaking powers of the Commission to another body. The negotiating group must be treated as a state agency for the purpose of Open Meetings and Public Records Act. The process of developing regulations is terribly slow already, and I would not like to see it slowed further. Also, it seems that this technique would work best with highly controversial issues. Many of the Commission's recent regulations have resulted from legislative mandates. This is true of simplified rate making, TRS, the telephone service to the deaf community, interstate phone service, and the regulatory cost charge. It is not clear to me how these regulatory proceedings would have benefit from negotiated rulemaking. If this becomes an issue, much more research will be necessary. Lower RCC rates for electric utilities. The Commission responded to the legislative order on March 1, 1933 as follows. The recommendation in the Sunset Audit stated Alaska Statute 4205-253 should be amended to require APUC to periodically adjust the regulatory cost charge on an industry-by-industry basis. Further, the automatic repeal date of this statute should be deleted. The Commission agrees that the program should be made permanent by deleting the automatic repeal date for the RCC. Last year, the legislature switched the funding source for the Commission from general funds to this regulatory assessment. The Commission expended significant resources and developed regulations and procedures to make the program work and to make compliance by affected entities as straightforward as possible. The program is in place and running smoothly. However, the Commission cannot support the recommendation to require itemization of rates under the RCC program by utility pipeline carrier type. Although in theory the recommendation has some merit, it is not at all clear to the Commission that it would be either practical or cost-effective to attempt to implement at this time. Individual RCC rates would require full and direct allocation of the Commission's cost. The recommendation, if implemented as drafted, would substantially increase the cost of the RCC program. Full cost allocation would be expensive, especially during the year when it was implemented. A permanent increment to the Commission's budget would be required. The Commission would face a new administrative burden of settling individual RCC rates, setting individual RCC rates, and handling the protests to the rates. One of the key principles guiding the development of the RCC was simplicity. This was true both for the utilities and carriers, their customers, as well as the efficient administration of the program. The Commission has been able to absorb the ongoing cost of the RCC program from its existing budget because the program has been kept simple and workable. The auditor's recommendation for further refinement of RCC would require a statutory cap, would require the statutory cap of 0.61% of adjusted gross revenues to be substantially increased. Based on their estimates by utility type for purpose of discussion, the current authorized budget for the Commission would require increasing the cap to 0.85 for certain utility groups at a minimum. From the perspective of most utility customers facing a regulatory cost charge bill of less than $20 per year, different rates for different utility types would not have a measurable effect on their total bill. And finally, the APUC responds to the recommendation of the legislative auditor. The Alaska Public Utilities Commission concurs with the legislative auditor's finding that the Commission is meeting its public purpose and supports extension of the sunset date at least 4 years. Again, under the RCC, the Commission opposes the required adjustment of the RCC on an industry-by-industry basis. Keep it small, keep it simple, and keep it uniform. The administrative expense of making these changes would far exceed any value of individualization of rates. As I stated in our response to the legislative auditor recommendation, from the perspective of the customer, the difference in the maximum bill would be about $20. It would not have a measurable effect if we would change the method of calculating. Easier access for utility customers to opt in or out of regulations. I support increasing the cutoff from $325,000 to either $500,000 or $1 million for economically regulated electric utilities to be eligible to vote for deregulation. This $1 million ceiling would mean that 9 more electric utilities would be able to hold deregulation elections. Also, one additional local telephone company would qualify under this standard. Timekeeping system. The Commission agrees that this recommendation is worthwhile to pursue. If accomplished for internal management purposes, the system could be designed relatively economically. However, if the system is required to serve as a basis for billing, such as those recommended in the auditor's first recommendation, it would be considerably more costly. In either case, a fiscal note would be required to carry out this recommendation. Commissioners' access to adequate staff support. I am proposing to beef up the staff support available commissioners on regulatory policy issues. When a commission staff is named a party to a proceeding, the judicial ex parte rule prevents commissioners from seeking their advice or research except as formally presented in the case on record. Specifically, we're proposing to upgrade one position and create one new slot to serve as commissioner's policy analyst. Details of this proposal will appear in the commission's fiscal year 95 budget request. And finally, the staggered commissioner's terms. The commission reported this one by a statutory, supported this one, but a statutory change would be needed to correct this time. Two commissioners' terms expired last year, and the terms of the new appointees are scheduled to expire again on the same day in 1999. I'm willing to attempt to answer any questions you folks may have.
Any questions?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On the question of different regulatory cost charges for different industries, you know, when I look at the chart in the auditor's report, I mean, I can see that it's skewed, but I hear your arguments about what we might make up in equity, we might lose in efficiency. The question that's in my mind is, what happens if you, or what could happen if you ever get into a really big contest? And I don't know, I don't have anything specific in mind, but take one of these industries and say there's a real knockdown, drag-out battle where, you know, you run up hundreds of thousands of dollars of expenses to try to sort it all out. In that case, it might be unfair to have a standard cost that gets spread across all the industries.
We can, in those cases, cases that you mentioned there, we can cost allocate over and above the normal RCC under the present statute. There is a provision in the present statute, in case we run one of these cases that run in real large dollars, we can still cost allocate as we did prior to RCC when we cost allocated all the costs. Hmm. That's still available.
That's all I have.
Let me say this in the RCC now. Again, we're more or less objects of your affection on this. If you decide that you want to change, again, we will accept it. Our whole thing is be sure you check the cost-benefit ratio out against what the cost would be created. Another point on this, the participants, the 69,000 customers that are under PCE, already get a break because the PCE portion of it is not, you know, they pay their RCC on the total, on their final bill. That's already comes out of there, the amount they receive in PCE. When they receive their bill, they get a PCE adjustment on it, and their RCC is on their final bill, so there is already an adjustment made under the PCE customers. Again, please understand, the commission is not strong on that. What our main point is keep it simple and don't get it so complicated, we got to add one or two more people just to administer the RCC. Then I think we can do it.
You're telling us, Commissioner, that the agency is here just to serve?
That's exactly. We're public servants.
Further questions? Okay. Dave Hutchins. One other question before you go. That liberally construed language, do you know when that passed the legislature?
Oh, I can't even tell. Maybe
was that in the original act?
Was that in the original? I don't really know. I've been here 3 years.
Mr. Chairman, Dave Hutchins, the Electric Co-op Association. I think liberally construed language became a part of the ABUC statute when it was recreated in essentially its present form back in the 70s.
In 75 when they added the new members and the new...
No, earlier than that, perhaps... It was when it became a full-time commission, whatever year that was.
Thanks, Doug. Would you check that out for us, find out which legislature changed that? Dave?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. In regard to the basic question of whether or not the Public Utilities Commission should be continued in existence, our association is fully in support of continuing the ABUC. We think it's important now for essentially the same reasons that it was created in its present form years ago. And from our perspective, those are that particularly where you have an investor-owned utility that exists to serve the public but also make a profit for its stockholders, that you have a diversity of interest there between the consumers and the owners, and the PUC, someone needs to regulate the rates. Make sure that the rates are in fact fair and reasonable for the public. Another basic purpose for the PUC originally and exists today is that electric utilities, at least, are essentially very natural monopolies to serve efficiently. And you can very easily get into territorial disputes if you don't have somebody that assigns the service area. and it was to resolve a long-standing dispute between Chugach Electric Association and the municipality of Anchorage, or who would serve where within the municipality of Anchorage, that that in fact caused the creation of the APUC in essentially its present form. And through the years, the PUC has resolved those territorial disputes, although there was a new one that came to our attention last fall. And it's been sitting there simmering all these years, and nobody had ever noticed it. And we would encourage the PUC to resolve it. This came out of the service areas overlapping between Tlingit-Haida Regional Electrical Authority and Alaska Power and Telephone down here in southeast Alaska. And the order that was entered in that case in, I think it was October, had an unfortunate sentence in there, something to the effect that, of course, these service areas are not exclusive anyway. We would take very strong exception to that. And at first, when we became aware of this order, thought that we might need to come to this PUC Sunset Review with proposed language to correct a new problem. As we've gotten into it, however, Mr. Chairman, we have become comfortable with the fact that the present law is, in fact, adequate. There's a long legislative history that the service areas for electrics are, in fact, to be exclusive. And we think that is the law of the state. And I simply mention it today to renew the long history that that is, in fact, the law. And I would like to submit to the committee copies of a letter I just became aware of this morning, a very fine letter that Senators Duncan and Zaroff have written to the commission in that regard. And I simply submit that for the record, Mr. Chairman. The second point I'd like to discuss would be in the legislative audit booklet that you have, the report, audit recommendation number one from the auditor, and that was that there needs to be a better equity in the way the regulatory cost charge is allocated among the different kinds of utilities. The auditor recommended one specific method of doing this that sounded reasonable in terms of being quite equitable. The commission objects to that, however, as being too expensive to administer. And since we're having to pay their bills now through RCC, we have to be very sensitive to their costs as well. And so bowing to the commission's preference that that not be the way it be done, we would suggest to the committee another simpler way of getting reasonable allocations among the different kinds of utilities. This allocation method was one proposed by then Representative Bert Sharp in the House Finance Committee when RCC was originally adopted about 3 years ago. Basically, what it would do is you would subtract the cost of power on electric utilities from their total revenues before you determine the allocation. Very simple step. The commission already gets these reports from each regulated utility. It's on two lines. You have cost of purchase power and the cost of generation, and they have those figures already, and all you'd have to do is simply deduct that from the total revenues. And the effect of that, if you take a look at the way it is now under the existing method on RCC, the legislative auditor estimated that the workload for electrics was about 34% of the workload of the commission and declining, and the regulatory cost charge was 39% and increasing. In fact, it's 43% this year and headed up. There's something basically wrong with the formula, and we think this would be a rough and ready kind of justice that would fix it. It would be very simple to administer. Under the Sharp proposal from 3 years ago, it would recalculate the regulatory cost charge to 28% for electrics to approximately the same percentage of the workload.
Well, who loses? Assuming neutral revenue to APUC, somebody has to go up, right?
So yes, Mr. Chairman, others would go up, and particularly It would go to telephones, as the other large group regulated by the PUC. Presently, the auditor estimates their share of the workload to be 45%, and they're paying 21% of the RCC, and this would increase them to 27%.
What kind of money are we talking about? And what you're paying now and what you're proposing the 28% would pay?
Mr. Chairman, I have the results of the work I did on this last summer, but I don't have the calculations with me. I don't remember the numbers. But if you have your audit report there with you, you can look in the RCC recommendation, and I think some numbers are listed there. The total budget of the commission is something on the order, Mr. Chairman, $3.5 million a year.
3.6 this year.
And so we're talking percentages here, changing in the electrics from 43% down to 28% of that $3.6 million.
Questions?
On a question, going on to the next issue.
Before you go on to the next issue, Mr. Chairman, if I might, tell me again the formula that you said if you subtract the cost of the purchase power and...
There are two lines on these reports. One is cost of purchase power and the other is cost of generation.
Okay.
And you need to subtract those two lines. Some cost of power for some utilities would all be on one line and some would all be on the other. There would be a few, like Golden Valley, will have some on both lines. But in any event, you'd subtract those two lines from the total revenues to get mm-hmm. the adjusted revenues for electrics for calculating RCC. Very simple to do.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, the next topic I'd have was also related to regulatory cost charge. You heard Chairman Schreyer suggest that there should be some language added to provide for a true up at the end of the fiscal year so that the surplus is carried over to the following year and it doesn't have to be raised again. We would very heartily support that recommendation from the PUC. The fourth one I have is the audit recommendation number 4. And this is the suggestion that there needs to be a system for the PUC's commission itself to have adequate staff, adequate access to staff during dockets when the regular staff is not available to them. And we're sympathetic to the commission in that, Mr. Chairman. We think the commission's proposal on that to have some professional staff of their own separate from the regular staff would be appropriate. They would function similar to professional staff for a legislative committee, for example, where they would do analysis on issues, and that setting would perhaps do some of the drafting on proposed orders that go to the commission for their consideration. We would support that. Audit recommendation number 5 for staggered terms. We would support that change. And finally, Mr. Chairman, the most important from our perspective is removing the phrase liberally construed from the statute. We would suggest that it be replaced with a test that the commission shall have the powers specifically conferred or necessarily implied by statute. The chairman's correct when he says that there have not been many cases in the courts where that has come up, 9 or so cases. Some of those were multiple issues in a single case. But there have been a number of other occasions where the commission has cited the liberally construed as the principal authority to take actions that did not result in lawsuits. We think that the liberally construed needs to be removed so that it is the legislature that makes the decision on what the authority of the commission is,
not the commission and the courts making that decision. And the chairman is correct that in many cases where liberally construed has been invoked, the utilities have in fact benefited from those. We don't dispute that a bit. But what we say is that it really should be the legislature's call, not us or anybody else that that tries to get the change through through the commission and the courts. An example of why we think this is so important. The Healy Clean Coal Project. There was an effort to kill that by essentially adding a new test for authorization, and that was a test for adding environmental externalities into the calculation of the feasibility. There was absolutely no legislative history or language or anything that suggests that environmental externalities should be included in this kind of a case before the PUC. And in fact, the commission did turn that down, but by only a 3-2 vote. With different personnel, the decision would have gone the other way. In fact, might still go the other way in the court, because that's the basis, essentially, for the appeal from the commission's order. And it could still be turned around. And we don't think that's right. It should be the legislature that makes the call on what authority the PUC has. And with that, Mr. Chairman, I'm finished. Thank you for the opportunity to present our views, and please answer any other questions you might have.
Thank you, Dave. Any questions?
Just one, I'm trying to recall whether it was Chugach Electric or ATU in Anchorage, but it seemed, didn't they get into some pretty intense oversight from APUC about 10 years ago? And if it was Chugach, maybe you can comment on the extent of APUC's involvement.
Mr. Chairman, through the chair, there were a number of utilities that that had very intensive oversight by the commission about 10 years ago. Chugach was one of them. I think ATU, but I'm less knowledgeable about that side. And I know Alaska Village Electric Co-op. There were some on the staff who really felt that the commission basically should manage the utilities.
And was that part of the liberally construed, or was that more general?
No, I think that comes from their general oversight powers. I think they have the power to do that. I just hope they'll have the wisdom not to try it.
Okay, thank you, Dave. Anchorage, are you still online?
Yes.
Did you have somebody there that wanted to testify?
Yes, we have two people, Jack Reimer, the Alaska Telephone Association, and Jimmy Jackson with KPI.
Okay, let's go with Jack Reimer first, then.
Certainly makes no sense to keep going over the same issues, you know, if the commission
matter should be separated from the public utilities, from the commission itself, and then therefore the commission would need county staff and legal staff of its own.
Any questions? Okay, how about Jimmy Jackson then? Thank you, Mr. Reiner.
I don't have any comments today.
Okay, let's come back to Anchorage. The legislator auditor is here if anybody wanted to ask questions. Did anybody else want to? Senator Sharp.
Yeah, I wanted to ask Welker a question whenever we had time to get to him. One short, simple one. The chair, I can't find right offhand in here on your recommendations on the sunset extension. The bill currently calls for extension 1998. And a lot of your audits, I've noticed you have recommended specific extension dates. But is it in here, or did I miss it?
Mr. Chairman, Randy Welker, legislative auditor. Through the chair, Senator Sharp, on page 5 of the audit report, in the report conclusions. We are recommending the APUC be extended basically 10 years until the year 2003. This is keeping in line with some previous work we have done where we were recommending the sunset cycle be changed to spread the sunset review process out over a longer review cycle than the current four-year process. Particularly in APUC's case, Mr. Chairman, I believe APUC has probably been one of the most audited boards or commissions out there in the sunset process. They continually demonstrate a public purpose and a need. Things just do not change that quickly, we do not believe, to warrant a review by our office every 4 years. If there were particular circumstances that came up that merited audit attention, it could be handled through a special audit type of approach through the Budget and Audit Committee. That was basically the thinking behind our recommendation of a longer extension period.
Okay. Further questions? Thank you, Randy. Does anybody else want to testify on this bill today? With that, we will call this meeting adjourned, huh? And come back to this bill another time. Thanks for coming.